You've heard the background of the Ambassador of Exploration Award. And each of the recipients has the privilege of choosing a public repository for the award, which, as you now know, is really just on loan from the United States government. I get to keep it myself only so long as I speak today. So I'm going to be talking longer than I otherwise would. I'd like to explain why I thought the Cincinnati Museum Center was a qualified and particularly suitable institution for displaying this award. The Museum Center was born of the initiatives of the Cincinnati Historical Society and the Cincinnati Museum of Natural History. And many here would know that natural history is the history of things in nature, animal, vegetable, or mineral, and excludes humans and their activities. So we might conclude that the recounting of human activities is therefore, by the process of elimination, unnatural history. Geologists have a saying, rocks remember. They mean that some of natural history is recorded in the minerals and the structure of each boulder and pebble. And with the development of radioactive dating and the other techniques of rock and mineral analysis developed in the 20th century, geologists now have the tools to decipher the history of a rock reasonably accurately and without the human errors that often exist in the writings of human history. So today I'd like to recount some of the things we have learned and talk just a bit about a specific but very thin slice of natural history. Many eons ago, perhaps half a star lifetime, planets began to form around a star near the edge of the galaxy in of which we are a part. The star's name was Sun. After a time, Earth and its moon, Luna, became distinguishable and accepted members of the family. Determining whether they formed separately or together has been the objective of astronomers and cosmologists for centuries. As a result of the exploration and analysis of the past four decades, today's preferred hypothesis is that about 4.5 billion years ago, Earth collided with a somewhat smaller planet, probably about the size of Mars, and it was kind of a celestial fender bender. And much of the resultant detritus consolidated into an Earth-orbiting amalgam, the beginning of our moon. As Luna coalesced into a sphere, the material in the center of the sphere felt the crushing weight of 1,000 miles of rock on top of it. The intense gravitational pressures, coupled perhaps with some radioactive decay, caused very high temperatures in the interior of this young planet. In addition to being 4 times smaller than Earth in diameter, its viscera was not molten iron like Earth, but rather a molten mixture of oxides of silicon and some assorted other minerals. There were still many other smaller bodies revolving around the sun. itinerant wayfarers whose future was just a matter of chance. From time to time, these miniature planets would collide with Luna. The impact created by their tremendous velocity would vaporize them and a large part of Luna, creating enormous craters. These were explosions larger than any nuclear bomb. The craters were sometimes hundreds of miles across. It was a turbulent and terrifying time, with no protection from the chaos created by the unbridled elements. Occasionally, a line would appear across the part of a crater with a creaking, grinding groan. The line became a crack, and the crack became a rupture. Through the rupture flooded a sea of lava, molten rock, incandescent and so fluid that it filled the crater like hot soup in a bowl. The raging pressures below the surface searched for weaknesses in the walls containing it. An occasional vent would yield a geyser of erupting gas, ash, and globules of liquid rock. The drops of liquid rock would radiate away the heat quickly during their flight over the craters below. They would solidify into marbles of black glass and shatter into a million fragments when they smashed into the surface below. A half billion years of this chaos passed. And finally, everything began to quiet down. That is prologue. Now, the story. A thin sliver of natural history. We begin. A sea of molten basalt is slowly solidifying. As the crust cools, it cracks. Currents of hot lava press upward, fracturing and sculpting the fresh rock above it. A piece of this young basalt is completely separated from its mother. His brothers and sisters lie nearby. Let's call him Buck. Buck opened his view to the clear black sky above him. All was not completely quiet. Occasionally the ground would tremble from a nearby impact of an isolated meteor. The ejector from a new crater would pass high over Bach, crashing into the rocks miles away and making new but smaller craters. Sand particles from these craters peppered Bach, his siblings, and his neighbors. In the sky above, the sun would rise in the east and parade majestically across the sky set in the west. The earth also set and rose with regularity. Occasionally, new stars would burn with fiery brilliance against the velvet blackness, then settle down into a constant gleam. Bach never saw a star twinkle, save when it passed through the thin band of atmosphere around Earth. Constellations changed their shape and their appearance as stars appeared, moved, and disappeared. During the next half billion years, Bach changed as he grew into adulthood. The crystals of plagioclase, which had somehow formed during his solidification, added a few plates of molecules. He felt this gnawing in his viscera like a cancer. Occasionally, he thought he felt the itch of change in olivine in his vesicles. It was not organic life, but in his universe, and by his standards, it was life. 20 grams of Bach was severed one day when a light-colored visitor from a crater far to the north fell on him. Box statistics were weight 2.24 kilograms, age 600 million years. Now he went through one of the first of some traumatic experiences throughout his lifetime. He didn't know what hit him. He was catapulted into the sky, flying toward the crater Maskelyne at a prodigious height and speed. Now he was falling faster and faster. He didn't know what he hit, but it was hard, and a significant part of him, his right side, broke away on the first impact. He still skipped a time or two, came to rest on the rim of a small crater, perhaps 10 meters across and a couple meters deep. He took stock of himself. He had left all his relatives and neighbors far behind. Who knows whether they were vaporized, melted, or carried off to the far northeast past the Sea of Crises. Bach was alone. He'd lost a good bit of weight, but he was still healthy. He was still young. He would survive. It took about a half a billion years to get over the experience and settle down. And now he could take some time and observe what was happening in the sky. The sun looked about the same, a bit further away, perhaps. The earth was still in terrible upheaval. Cataclysmic change in the appearance of that planet was an everyday occurrence. Torrential forces seethed below the surface of Earth, and when that surface ruptured, the film of atmosphere turned opaque. Ash from volcanism. When the film cleared, the blue of the oceans dominated the color of the planet. That time would later be called the Archaeozoic Era, one of the earliest of the great geological ages of Earth. If there was any organic life on Earth, it was only limy sea plants. A peculiar thing happened. Earth started to slow down in her path across the sky. Finally, Earth reversed direction, then another reverse, and another. The arcs were getting smaller. Finally, Earth stopped, permanently installed 23 degrees west of the zenith. Bach could always find it there, changing from new Earth to half Earth to full Earth, back to half Earth, and cycle over and over again in endless repetition, a dependable and permanent clock in the sky. Another millennium went by, 1,000 millennia. Bach never tired of watching the changing Earth. Continents would creep out of the sea, at first furtively, then defiantly. An enormous mountain range was squeezed out of the shield now called Canada, only to give up after a time and subside back under the sea. Another millennium went by. Luna was quiet. Nothing ever happened, not so much as a crater. Well, maybe a little one now and then, but it wasn't like the old days. Bach could feel an occasional tremble from somewhere deep within the planet. Perhaps an occasional geyser of gas, nothing more. Bach was 3 billion years old now, 3B. Earth was coming out of the Proterozoic era, the time of the first algae, and perhaps the first animate cells. Over the years, the sting of an occasional micrometeorite bombardment or particles in the wind coming from the sun was a little wearing on Bach. He was probably a few grams lighter in his middle age. Earth still couldn't make up its mind what it wanted to be. Continents bobbed up and down below the sea like Halloween apples. Plants started appearing on the land. amphibians developed, ventured out into the sea, and eventually learned to stay on the land. And during the seemingly infinite time it took to build the great mountain ranges of North America, Europe, and Asia, Bach reached the age of 3.5. Luna remained quiet. Volcanoes were active in North America, and dinosaurs roamed the earth. They had disappeared almost before Bach noticed them. An entire chapter in organic history. When Bach was 3.65, the first of the Rockies were being formed. Bach took a nap. He missed the evolution of the mammal, the rise of the Sierra Nevada, the beginnings of man, the Ice Ages. He missed Plato and Genghis Khan and Darwin and Tsiolkovsky. He couldn't have guessed his nap would end with another traumatic experience, in some ways similar to the one 3 billion years before. It started with a rude awakening one morning, one lunar morning. A peculiar white creature was lifting him with an unusual metal device. He was roughly thrown into a box with some acquaintances he knew only slightly, and then the lid was closed, and it was dark. There was a brief force, then a sense of lightness for a time, then another brief force, then his weight somehow returned and changed. He felt at least 6 times heavier than the 190 grams he had weighed on back in the Sea of Tranquility on Luna. Suddenly, the lid opened. There was light. And more of those strange creatures, somehow different, and peculiar mechanisms, and there was a strange pressure of an atmosphere. And there was a number beside him. 10071. Clearly, they didn't know his name. More trouble, he was being dismembered. First a small slice, then another, then a big hunk, a couple of large pieces. He felt like he was getting back down to his normal weight, but at a terrible penalty in size. Bach was now on Earth. Statistics, color, light gray, earth weight, 117 grams, age, 3.7B. Now I have an admission to make. I was not completely truthful about Bach. He could not have seen Earth as clearly and as often as I indicated. Because during much of his middle-aged years, he was buried under the lunar surface. Thanks probably to a nearby meteor strike, he was returned to the surface where he rested and enjoyed the scenery for the next 300,000 years. So I lied. It's what authors call literary license. I embellished the story, but I wanted you to know the changes on Earth that Bach would have seen had he been in the proper position. So now we know most of Bach's history. And if you want to see Bach and have him clarify any points that may have been obscure, you may do so. He is, or at least part of him is, right there. The sample on the award is a chip of 2.039 grams. A chip off the old Bach, you might say. And now you know the reason for my being here. For I was the strange creature that kidnapped Bach from his homeland and brought him to this strange, new, and still changing planet. And I can't help feeling that I owe him an apology, or at least an explanation. But is it possible? Would I be able to convince him that we were only trying to understand a minuscule fraction of what he has seen? To try to understand where we have been in order to know better where we are going. Today, Bach looks up quizzically at these mysterious creatures that look down on him, trapped inside his transparent prison. Does he see us as something new and different on the earth that he has watched so long? Or could we be creatures that might just be able to affect our own destiny? Or would he see us just as another transient species, like the dinosaur, existing for only a few minutes of geologic time and leaving no trace after the next cycle of continents dipping below the sea, except perchance the occasional fossil of Homo sapiens? You may ask, but don't ask him about the Earth's early Proterozoic, because he missed all that. So thank you, Mr. Administrator, for giving me this opportunity to receive and have possession, so ever briefly, of Bach. And I now am delighted to present him to this museum center. And I hope that I've persuaded you that a place of natural history is a great place for Bach to be.